If you have a Bible with you, I'd love for you to take it out. We're going to be in Mark chapter 4 this morning together. And having lived on the Oregon coast for a number of years, I think I have not only seen some pretty impressive storms, I've told you bits and pieces of a couple of them, but I certainly have an increased appreciation for what sailors and fishermen and mariners face when they go out from the Columbia during the winter. Maybe you've watched, like, what's the fishing show in Alaska, the most dangerous, help me out here, my brain, dangerous, deadly cast, think that's, my brain's not working this morning. There's another one that follows a group that I think goes out of Newport, and you get a sense of what it's like for those crab fishermen in the winter. But if you're not familiar with it, the mouth of the Columbia in particular has this lovely nickname, the Graveyard of the Pacific. You can still go find shipwrecks around the area. The Peter Iredale is probably the best known up in Fort Stevens. And the issue is with the Columbia, you have these large swells come in, often more than 30 feet, coming off of the Pacific in the winter, and then that collides with a pretty strong current coming down the river. And it can turn into some pretty fascinating waves. This is a picture, for example. This is a tanker that's a few hundred feet long, probably draws at least 20 feet of water, and the whole front end's, you know, coming completely out on these waves as it comes in. It may not look like that big of a deal, but if this, even a vessel this size, was hit sideways by some of the waves on the bar, it could be catastrophic. As you can imagine, being a fisherman in this boat, this boat's maybe 20 feet long, and those waves are clearly bigger. You got to time it right, or you got trouble, right? This is the reality there. One wrong move, and it could kind of be done. And by the way, having lived there, if you ever get the chance to go up to the North Coast when there's a really, really good storm going, you can go out Fort Stevens, drive all the way out to the end of the road, and there's a viewing platform out at the jetty. And if you're lucky, you might see something like this. This is one of the Coast Guard surf rescue boats. These things can, like, flip upside down, and they'll come back up. The guys on the deck wear, like, I think a tether cord so they don't wash off. But they'll go out. This is practice. Like, that's a pretty boring job, right? That's practice. They go out when the waves are really big so they can be comfortable dealing with rescue situations like that. But being caught in a storm on the water is a serious thing. Has anyone experienced this? It's pretty serious pretty quickly oftentimes. And that's exactly the kind of setting we come to in the story in Mark chapter 4 this morning. If you have a Bible with you and want to turn to verse 35, we'll jump in there. And as I read, I would love for us to just try to imagine as best we can this story. We're going to dive into some of the details together, but just try to imagine the situation. This is what we read. Mark chapter 4, being in verse 35, it says, "On that day being the one that we looked at last week where Jesus was teaching these parables, there was a large crowd gathered. It says, that day when evening had come, he said to them," this is to the disciples, "let us go across to the other side of the Sea of Galilee." And leaving the crowd, verse 36, they took him with them in the boat just as he was. Assumedly, they were already in this boat. And other boats were with them. And here it comes, verse 37, "A great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he," Jesus, "was in the stern asleep on the cushion." It's an interesting picture. "And the disciples woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?' And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Be still. Peace, be still.'" And if you can imagine, in the midst of this raging storm, the wind ceased and there was great calm. "And he said to them, 'Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?'" Seems like an interesting question. And then we read this last piece, that they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Now, if you're here last week, you had the pleasure of hearing Joshua Little walk us through these parables. If you weren't here, I'd encourage you, if you go on our website, all the messages are available to listen to. Joshua did a great job last week. And he was showing us Mark's emphasis on this idea of having ears to hear, not just listening and having it going in one ear and out the other, but having ears to hear. And this idea of hearing is responding. To really hear something is to respond to it, to act in obedience in the case of the teachings of Jesus. And this was this long day. If you read through the part we looked at last week, the first 34 verses of the chapter, it seems this was a long day. There's a lot of teaching going on. Jesus, again, is teaching from this boat. His disciples would have been out there with him in the sun all day. Some of you can remember what it's like to be in the sun all day. It gets tiring, you know, that like feeling, especially when you're on the water. Anyone, like, I know you guys were after, when you're out on the water all day in the sun, like, there's just this like deep, tired you sense, right? So this is probably their reality. They've also been trying, as we saw last week, they're wrestling, trying to understand what Jesus is teaching. And so probably mentally they're tired as well, just trying to wrap their heads around everything. And now it's evening. These guys are almost certainly wiped out. And so Jesus decides that it's time to head out in this boat to the other side of the lake. Now they were probably doing this because this was the only way to get away from the crowds. If they would have walked down the shore, they would have never been able to shake free from the crowds. And this was, by leaving, was probably the only way to get these crowds to disperse and go back to, you know, safe places for the evening. So Jesus tells the disciples they're going to go across the lake, take this boat to the other side. Assumedly, they're going to go have some time alone and rest. And we notice from verse 36 that there were other boats with them. It's quite plausible that these were other fishermen. We know Peter and Andrew and James and John were from that very area. That had been their vocation for years. So probably these other boats are people they had fished with in the past, people they knew. Or maybe there's some other disciples, other followers of Jesus along. And what's really cool about this story is that we actually have some help imagining it. This is called the Jesus boat. This is really cool. This is sitting in a museum on the north side of the Sea of Galilee even today. What's cool is this is called the Jesus boat because it was found right in the same area where this story takes place, found right in the area where the disciples were called to follow Jesus. It's been carbon 14 dated to around the time of Jesus, and what helped them really date it was there was an oil lamp inside the boat that dated a little more precisely, and then amazingly there were some coins in the boat that dated right to 2930 AD, right at the time of Jesus. So we have this, you know, historical piece that was buried in the silt for hundreds and hundreds of years and unearthed that gives us a sense of what the boats actually were like in the time of Jesus. This is, I think I have a picture here. Yeah, this is an artist's rendition of kind of what it would have looked like before it sat buried and decaying for years and years and years. These boats were about 25 feet long, about the size of a ski boat, big ski boat, 7.5 feet wide and only 4.5 feet deep. They typically had a little deck on the bow and on the stern. As you can see from the picture, they had a mast that they could be powered by sails, and then they also had oars. Believe it or not, this boat would have a crew of five and could carry either 10 passengers or more than a ton of cargo, often fish. This was what they used to fish with. So if you can picture this boat out on this water, this is the kind of scene that we're trying to imagine. An evening comes. They've been out in a boat like this with Jesus probably standing on one of those two decks, either the bow or the stern, teaching these great crowds all day out in the sun, obviously exposed to the elements. Evening comes and they set out to cross the sea. And again, this is what takes place, right? We read it in verse 37 and 38. It says that a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat. If you can picture that, that's an uncomfortable reality. So the boat was filling. But again, Jesus was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. The cushion, by the way, was likely a ballast, big pillowy-like bag full of weight that sat in the stern. There's Jesus asleep, and they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" So that beginning phrase in verse 37 is either a furious squall or a great windstorm. This is not a normal little breeze. This is a serious storm that's being depicted for us. It may not seem like that big of a deal when you think about the Sea of Galilee. It's only 13 miles long and only 8 miles wide at its widest point. However, because of the topography around there, Raymond, you may even picture this better than some of us having lived in that part of the world. You have these valleys coming from the west. You have the lake is actually below sea level, and then they have Golan Heights up to the east. And the topography can cause some really significant winds to happen on a regular basis. It's not uncommon, in fact, for afternoon winds to produce waves of at least 7 feet, which doesn't sound like that big of a deal unless you look at that boat and realize even a 7-foot wave could be a pretty big deal. Again, this is what that boat looks like, right? And see, it's not that high out of the water. And one wave sideways, even at 7 feet, could be catastrophic, okay? So I'm more comfortable in a boat like this. Anyone with me? Yeah? This is actually, I can tell you, our family had the privilege of getting to rent a boat like this on Lake Powell. This thing's 59 feet long, a little different than that 25 feet, right? And it's certainly more than 4.5 feet tall. It's enclosed. It's got multiple bedrooms and bathrooms and a kitchen and a living room. It's ridiculous. It's got air conditioning, right? But I can tell you from experience that when the afternoon thunderstorms come up on Lake Powell, you are in a channel that's only a mile wide, and it can be utterly terrifying to be out even a boat this size. I have vivid memories from high school. We were in one of these boats and weren't quick enough to get to a beach for the night, and an afternoon storm came up, and a wave broke over the bow of the boat so hard that the sliding glass door across the front jumped out of its track, fell on the ground, and this river of water comes through the living room and kitchen and down the hallway and through the middle of the boat. And I was pretty scared, right? That's a 59-foot boat. So I can only imagine being in this, in a similar storm, even on a lake that size. This would be terrifying. This would be utterly terrifying. They wouldn't have been able to put their sails up in that kind of wind. And so you can picture the disciples straining at the oars, yelling to one another over the sound of the wind, trying to keep the boat from taking a wave to the side. They would have been trying to keep things in the boat as waves broke over it. Probably somebody's bailing water furiously, trying to keep up with what's going on. This is a pretty tense situation. It's getting so bad, in fact, that these guys who are professional fishermen who live their lives on this lake believe they're going to die. This is not an uninformed opinion or somebody who's just in over their head. This is a real situation. Their boat's taking on water, and their situation is grave. And one of the questions we want to ask as we're reading through the New Testament in particular is, have I heard this story before? Or have I heard a story like this before? It's a question we need to learn to ask. If you were in the time of Jesus, certainly as a young Jewish person, you were raised, your schooling was built around understanding the Old Testament. I've spoken in the past of how if you were a good student, by the time you were done with elementary school, you memorized the first 5 books of the Bible. Memorized. This was like you were saturated in what we know as the Old Testament scriptures. And so often a story would come up and it would bring to mind stories from the past. And sometimes an author in the New Testament will do that purposely to help us remember some things. Even last week, Joshua was pointing out to us that the teaching earlier in chapter 4 seems to intentionally echo some things from Psalm 135 and from Isaiah 6. And so we come to this story, and it's a helpful question to ask. You know, is this echoing something we've heard before? Are there other stories of storms and people almost dying and almost drowning? Well, certainly another story comes to mind right away, which is a great storm that comes upon some mariners while a man of God is asleep. Only this man of God was Jonah, and he was running from God. But there's some real similarities to these two stories. They're striking. Of course, in that story, they end up throwing Jonah into the sea, and it's God who quiets the waters and quiets the wind. And they end up terrified in fear. Psalm 107 speaks of how terrified men in distress and storms and as they're at sea will call out to God, and it's God who will make the storm still. In Isaiah 51, in the Psalms, and certainly in the crossing of both the Red Sea and the Jordan throughout the Old Testament, it's always God who controls the wind and the waves. It's God who quiets that. By the way, it seems ironic in our story that you have these terrified fishermen while it's the carpenter who's sound asleep, right? Seems kind of backwards. Seems like the one who's not the fisherman would be the one who's concerned. No doubt Jesus would have been tired after teaching all day, but I think there's deeper significance in his resting in a situation that, again, echoes some things we find in the Old Testament. If we were to look at Psalm 3, Psalm 4, Psalm 121, Proverbs 3, Job, we would see that there's this picture of resting peacefully in the midst of a storm, demonstrating trust in God the Father. And so I think what we have here in Mark is this picture of Jesus in his trust, in his rest, in his connection, understanding the Father is going to care for him. Everything's fine, even though the disciples didn't necessarily see it that way. All these echoes really set us up for how this story ends, because it's different than what we would expect if we know those other stories. Now, in this situation, it's clear that the disciples view Jesus resting as a lack of concern for their well-being. They awaken Jesus in frustration, it seems even indignation, believing he doesn't care for them because he's resting in the midst of this storm and this danger. But what are they asking in their question? Let's just look at it, because it's kind of straightforward. Again, verse 37, if we pick up, we get the storm. There's a great windstorm. The waves are breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he, Jesus, was in the stern asleep on the cushion, and they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we're perishing?" That's their question. Do you not care that we're perishing? Do you not care? Don't you care? By the way, as I consider this storm story that we're looking at, isn't that a common question that we find ourselves asking when we face what feel like major storms in life? God, don't you care? Why aren't you doing something about this? Why are you resting or seemingly not even paying attention in the midst of this difficulty that I'm facing, whether it's overwhelming financial distress? And we can find ourselves going, God, don't you care? Don't you want me to be able to pay my bills? Or you know, a loved one's terminally ill or in pain, and they're not being healed. God, don't you care? Don't you care what I'm going through? You lose a job that, you know, unjustly, or you deal with the loneliness of a heartbreak. We have all these things we go through in life where we too gravitate towards that question, don't we? That's our response of when we don't see God acting the way we think he should. Like, don't you care? And this is the question being asked of Jesus as well. By the way, I think it's a natural question to gravitate to. I wouldn't beat us up over that question, because we often don't see the whole picture, and so in our minds, it makes sense to ask that question. For the disciples, it seems like a fair question. They're straining. They're yelling to each other in the wind. They're terrified. They're bailing out water. They're just trying to hold it together with all their might in the midst of this storm, and there's Jesus sleeping. The disciples don't see action, and so they assume that's a lack of care and concern. They don't see Jesus acting, and so they assume he doesn't care. Again, when we face storms and it raises those questions of love, of God's love, God's goodness, when we don't seem to see action, when we don't see God doing what we think God should do, often it causes us to wonder if God cares. I want to read the scene again, and I want to focus this time on hearing the question that Jesus asks, and I'm going to read the passage again if you want to read on with me in your Bibles. Beginning verse 35. On that day when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And I hope you're kind of imagining this as I read. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And then hear what Jesus says and how he responds. Verse 39, and he awoke and he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. If you can imagine that, that's kind of freaky, by the way. And he said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And then here's their response. They were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the seas obey him?" What's interesting in this story is that it's Jesus who calms the wind and the waves. And he does so simply by speaking, "Peace, be still." I would submit to you that this is one of the ways Mark is showing us the divinity of Christ. Because to his audience, it was always God who had the capacity to stop the wind and the waves, and here Jesus is doing the same thing. And Jesus asks, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" Now remember, this is early in the story, early in the journey. And one of the interesting things about this is we don't have any evidence that Jesus taught them about storms. We don't have any evidence that he warned them about this coming. I think if he had done either of those, Mark probably would have clued us into it to give us some context. See, the issue isn't the storm. The issue is underestimating or not understanding the power of Jesus' presence with them. In fact, I want to say really clearly, I wish the point of this story was for us to realize, hey, you know, Jesus is going to make all the storms go away and make it all better. I don't think that's the point of this story. I don't think at all that's what Mark's trying to teach us, even though I kind of wish that was a deal because, you know, I want all the storms to go away, probably like you do. But the lesson is more about faith that requires trusting even in the seemingly impossible. What does Jesus expect of his disciples here? It's pretty incredible. They weren't prepared for this moment. They were blindsided by it, clearly. They're terrified. And what does Jesus expect of them in the midst of that? Faith requires we recognize in the midst of the waves and the deafening roar of the wind and the chaos that even if he sleeps, seems to be asleep without concern, we can have faith because of the presence of Jesus. It isn't about the severity of the storm, even. It's about our ability to see Jesus for who he is. And that's what's taking place in the lives of the disciples here. Why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid? I think that simple question is so powerful, right? We may not find ourselves in a boat with water coming in and thinking we're going to die. But in the things we face, that question of why are you so afraid? Just stopping and recognizing the way fear is at work within us sometimes is so powerful and transformative. You know, you find yourself in the midst of just a bitter argument with someone, and you can't figure out why you can't resolve it. Like, just to stop and say, well, what am I so afraid of? Like, am I just afraid I'm not going to get my way? Am I afraid they don't care about me? Am I afraid they're not listening? And when we stop and ask that question and face into it, often it can change things. You know, it's fear that is a source of hatred, of division. It's fear that often keeps us from obedience, from being generous, from giving of ourselves. And often it's just fear of missing out, right? Or fear of what other people might think. But that question of what am I afraid of? What are you afraid of? Is a starting point for Jesus. I think it's a great starting point for us too, especially in the midst of storms, as we face difficulty, to just stop and honestly ask, why am I so afraid? Why am I so afraid? I would submit to you that that's a really powerful question. You know, I remember when we were in Seaside facing a point where, like, I honestly didn't think it was going to work out financially. I'd been spending 3-4 years remodeling a house. I did not know how I was going to finish it. I did not know how this was going to work out. You might remember the housing market around 2008 was awesome. That's sarcasm. And I remember coming to a point, just like I was stressed out. And I remember I was actually on a trip with students. We were serving some Native Americans up in Washington. And I was spending some time alone with God and just like trying to get into, why am I so stressed out about all this stuff? And that question kind of came up, like, what are you afraid of? Why are you so afraid? And I was like, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my house. That's all we have. And just facing into that question allowed me to go, but that's okay. Right? It allowed me the opportunity to be okay with that and to take a fresh step of faith and just trust. And God was super gracious in that situation. But oftentimes as we face difficulty, to just stop and look the fear in the face and say, okay, so what's the worst that could happen? It's powerful to just recognize you're still going to get through it and God's got a way. And maybe what we think is so bad isn't. You know, sometimes it's just that I'm afraid of missing out. Sometimes it's I'm afraid I won't be loved, or I'm afraid of death, or I'm afraid that God doesn't really care, like what the disciples are experiencing. But perhaps when we face into storms and we're overwhelmed, if we would begin with that question of why am I so afraid, it would really help to give context to the situation. But Jesus doesn't stop there. He asks the second part to the question, have you still no faith? As though they were supposed to know better. They were supposed to know to respond better. Have you still no faith? And the faith isn't that the storm will end, I don't think. It's, have you not understood who I am? And the most fascinating thing I think about this story is how it ends. Again, if we pick up in verse 40, here's Jesus asking this question. Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? It says, and they were filled with great fear. Let me go back. Missed an important part. He's already calmed the wind and the waves here, right? And then he asks this question. And then verse 41, it says, they were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him? They're asking that question like trembling. They're freaked out. And the interesting question is this. Were the disciples more afraid during or after the storm? Because the way Mark writes it, it's pretty clear it's after. Like, think about that for a second. These are people genuinely terrified they're going to lose their life in a raging storm out in the middle of this lake. And then it's quiet because Jesus speaks. And they're more terrified now than they were in the midst of the storm. The winds have gone silent. The waves have gone flat. Again, understand, they had grown up with these Old Testament stories. Their identity was formed around them. And in these stories in the Old Testament, the only one who would calm the wind and the waves was God. And so they're left with this overwhelming question when Jesus does the same thing of, who then is this that even the wind and the seas obey him? Jesus has freaked them out. They're terrified by his ability, his authority, his capacity. He not only has power over sickness and disease, but now wind and storms. And Jesus seems to demand a faith that sees beyond the circumstances, this faith that even in the midst of a storm would find peace because of his presence. It's a fascinating interaction. So what do we learn about Jesus in this? Certainly we learn of his authority. We learn of his ability. We learn that he's far more than even those closest to him thought he was. And his expectations seem fairly high. And what do we learn about following Jesus? Well, clearly it isn't always comfortable, right? In fact, most of the stories and interactions throughout the Gospels are quite uncomfortable for the disciples. They're even either confused and don't understand what Jesus is teaching, or they're scared because he's offending people of power, or in their situations like this where they just are overwhelmed and don't understand. Following Jesus isn't always comfortable, and faith requires trusting amidst the seemingly impossible. And Jesus chides them for their lack of faith and for their worrying. I want to ask this morning, if you can imagine this story and yourself as a part of it, just as you've heard and pictured this interaction, how do you think God might invite you to respond? What would he want you to see about Jesus this morning? Or about your life as one following Jesus? There's something within that story that perhaps sticks out to you. How would God invite you to respond? I would imagine some of you this morning very much feel like you're in the midst of a storm. Perhaps this morning the invitation is simply to find peace not in the resolution of the storm, but in God's presence. Maybe it's that simple for you, I don't know. Maybe God would invite you this morning to take another look at Jesus. Like the disciples, we may need a larger vision of Jesus. Their picture clearly was not big enough because they were really terrified when they saw Jesus for who he was. Maybe this morning God would invite you simply to take a fresh step in following Jesus. Maybe there's even a potential storm you see on the horizon and God would say, get in the boat anyways and come with me. It's going to be all right. But as we sing this morning, I want to leave you with this question of simply, how would God invite you to hear this story this morning and to respond? Let's pray. Father, We ask for the capacity to see Jesus for who he is. We ask for greater faith. Father, the storms we find ourselves in this morning, this week, the storms that seem to be brewing on the horizon, would you help us to have faith even when it seems like you're not acting the way we think you should? Would you help us to rest even when it seems like rest doesn't make sense? Would you help us to be able to recognize and face into our fears, that we can see them for what they are and choose still to trust in you? I would ask you to speak to us this morning from this text. Father, would you make clear to us what you might be inviting us towards as a response to this story and to the person of Christ? It's in his name we ask. Amen.